and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And this week, or rather today, because we are kind of ramping up production on the podcast, partly because we figure people are at home, they might need a little more entertainment, a little more guidance in that entertainment, but I think to a large extent just because we want to do it because we're at home and we have to do it and we're watching a lot of stuff and we want to talk about it. But this episode is going to be kind of all over the place, going to cover some news, do some catch up on some things that Daryl has been watching while he was traveling and not on the podcast. And then officially, I guess our big review is going to be Hillary, but I think we'll probably, you know, do that relatively quickly. We'll do this is the Hulu documentary about Hillary Clinton.
Well, and don't forget The Bachelor. We're definitely going to touch on it. And by touch on it, I mean focus pretty heavily.
Yes.
Let's see. Well, why don't we start with some TV stuff, some fun TV stuff. Let's talk about The Bachelor, and then we'll maybe also talk a little bit about Daryl's thoughts on Love is Blind.
Oh, yeah. Those are related. Also, it's a good time to talk about reality TV because they have the, I know they're still planning to do it. I don't think they've done it yet, but they're going to do the German reveal to the Big Brother household about the coronavirus epidemic because they don't know. Have you seen that?
Oh my God. Wait, what? Let's zoom back for a minute. So they're filming right now is what you're saying?
Yeah, they're in the process of filming and you know they like isolate them from Big Brother, right? Like they're right. In the house and they're cut off from all external communications. And so they don't know that, I don't know how long they've been in there, but they definitely don't know the extent of the current coronavirus epidemic. So they're gonna live on TV tell it to them. In German, so we'll have to wait, I guess, for the translations to come through. But
they're gonna tell them live on TV, like for what? Like they're bringing them out of the house, or they're gonna leave them in there. While they're in and be like, by the way, this is happening.
I think they're leaving them in there.
Yo,
and they're just gonna tell them.
This is gonna be a shit show. I wonder how they're gonna tell them.
Wouldn't you just panic? I think they would freak out, but I mean, I don't know. It would be kind of like I saw another tweet. Somebody was like, hey, it just occurred to me like the only people truly not at risk are the astronauts on the ISS. And it's kind of like that, right? It's like, wouldn't you be like, well, maybe we should just stick around in here for now because
but they're
safer
families.
Than anywhere else.
Yeah, maybe but you assume that these people have people that they love. They're families, their parents and grandparents or people they know who are immunocompromised and are like, oh, I
well, hopefully they allow them to talk to those people.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
That would be really nice and probably like necessary. I feel like I might like if I was in their position and I was told like, oh, by the way, this has overtaken the entire world and we, you know, it's kind of intense, serious situation. I would be like, if I don't get to call my mom right now, then I leave. I'm done forever.
Yeah, I don't think their intent is to be cruel to them. I mean,
obviously it is. Like, what the fuck? Why are you even filming it? Like,
I could imagine a scenario where, and I bet this is not what's happening. But if you're genuinely monitoring, like, have a sense of each person's like social network and their risk level, and so you knew that they didn't. It wasn't like they had to get in touch with anyone. Then I could imagine it would be a relief not to know. You know, like if no one told me any of this shit was happening and I just emerged from the house at a certain point and like, hey, the world is in flames, but luckily you got to relax in this house for a couple of months. Like, I would say thank you. Thank you very much. I did not want to know while all that was happening.
You know what? I actually have firsthand experience because that's pretty similar to what happened to me. Like, I was in New Zealand. I got back just before the shit really hit the fan, like, what we got back on March 12th, I'm actually now currently like truly self quarantining or whatever for the 14 day period as recommended by the government of Canada. And like we were following things somewhat when we were away, but not closely. And so, and when we came back, like it wasn't yet the situation at airports that there was any kind of insanity or hecticness. Like everything was actually pretty subdued because it was like in the port before people started freaking out about getting home or getting to wherever they were trying
to
go. Yeah,
they were just not flying because like coronavirus, but then so it was quiet.
The travel ban hadn't gone into place.
Exactly, yeah. So yeah, we got back and then it was like we just got back to a totally different world. But in retrospect, it's like, wow, I really enjoyed, I extra enjoy the enjoyment that I had while I was there, carefree, like not really doing anything and just kind of hanging out. And getting engaged, by the way. I should say that on the podcast.
Congratulations, by the way. Congratulations. Thanks. To Tara. You guys are great.
Yeah.
But mostly to you.
Yeah.
Mostly to you. Let's be real.
Well, that's right. Big win. That's where the benefit accrues, I think.
Oh, we should have Tara on the podcast. I wish she would join us.
I
know. Sometime.
Well, she's going to, I'm sure. I think she almost did for one show, but I forget what it was. There was a topic where she was like far more interested than I was. But
we just got to find the one that like her show and just do an episode on it and just be like, this one's for you, Tara.
Yeah.
We should actually do an episode where it's just significant others, just, and we're not even on it except to occasionally kind of stick our head up, be like, hey, are you guys talking about us? Are you talking about us?
That'd actually be pretty funny, I think.
Yeah, that would be good.
For us, at least. I don't know how much they would enjoy it, but I would like that.
Oh, by the way, here, I have some substantive informational updates on the situation so that we can clarify exactly what's going on. And it's crueler than I expected. Yeah. So in Germany, the original contestants entered on the 6th, February 6th. So that was like a different, like, do you remember what life was like on February 6th? I really don't.
I don't remember what life was like on March 6th.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So they knew nothing, right? Except that like, oh, there's this thing and it's happening in China and who knows what's going on. But like ever since then, people have been going in because they periodically add new members. But apparently those people have been under strict instructions not to share any updated information about the pandemic.
No way. That sounds like a lawsuit. Like,
I know.
I don't know how. I don't know what law they're breaking, but it feels like that should be a law, right? That you don't do that to people. Oh, it's like when the Supreme Court took away our right to class action lawsuits. That's for another time. Anyway.
Yeah. But so what they finally decided, like, apparently when the cases in Germany passed 7,500, they made a determination, like the broadcaster, that like, hey, let's tell them now because it's getting bad, and maybe they were morally compelled. But so the way they're going to tell them, they're going to have a doctor tell them. So I guess it's a medical professional at least. And then they're also going to have video messages from their relatives and families that accompany it to be like, oh, we're okay, like, you know, don't worry that much about us, here's what's going on, here's what we're doing. So it's a mix between compassionate and cruel. I don't know,
that's what you want.
Yeah it's
that's
weird. It's definitely weird
reality television anyway.
Yeah. And then there's also like the Toronto one closer to home. They entered in on March 6th. And they've been apparently questioning why they can't hear the masked live audience. And that's because there is no masked live audience since we've banned gatherings of 50 or more people, I think, at the federal level. So, that one's also coming down. I guess they're going to tell them. But.
Okay, I'm over Big Brother now. Let's talk about The Bachelor.
Yeah, all right.
So, Daryl, did you watch everything?
Oh yeah, I watched it all. The only thing I didn't watch was the Women Tell All episode.
Yeah, I didn't watch that one either.
But apparently stuff happened. Like Vanessa was kicked off on that one, right?
Vanessa, the little Vanessa F.
Yeah, the one who like
the little one who has like the country star boyfriend. Yeah, that one. Yeah. She was kicked off. Yeah, eventually. Yeah.
But I don't know for what. I know nothing about that, the context around her expulsion. Do you know anything about it?
Honestly, it's all kind of a blur, to be honest. I just feel like, in general, Peter wasn't a very good bachelor, and so he didn't have very good bachelorettes. And then on top of it, the producers clearly were like, we're just going to be cruel this season to everyone involved as much as possible. And I just thought it was a shit season overall for that.
Oh, her name was Victoria. So I got that wrong. So
no wonder
that backs
it was
up what you're
like
saying.
Feeling weird. Yeah. So I thought Victoria seemed like she was going to get sent home, and then he kept her. And then his ex-girlfriend was like, she's bad. She's a bad lady. And he was like, why are you so bad? And she was like, I was going to tell you I loved you. And then he kept her over someone else to go on overnights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and yeah. The one. Oh, yeah. She was like very genuine and nice. Anyway, she seemed to care about him genuinely. And like he met her whole family. He didn't meet Victoria's family because of weird drama.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was sad. Like it was too bad or whatever. So he chose Madison and Victoria F and
Hannah Ann.
Hannah Ann, right, as his final three. He did the dirty, it seems like, with both of them, but maybe not. And then not
oh,
with
yeah,
Madison,
with both
obviously.
Yeah. And then not because Madison specifically asked him. Not
at the
asked
end,
him.
Or before, but before he ever before. Went on Fantasies, she said, like, don't. If she didn't ask him or tell him. She just essentially said, like, if you sleep with someone, like, that's not really going to be, like, a bridge I can cross.
Yes. She essentially said, I'm not giving you an ultimatum, like, repeatedly. Like, everyone was like.
Even though
it's kind of like you gave her an ultimatum.
Like,
she
it
was
is
like,
an ultimatum. Yeah. Like, let's not. That's what it is.
Yeah. But because of her religious beliefs, she couldn't, like, she was like, oh, I don't think it's a cool that you would sleep with another woman while you're with me or considering being with me or whatever, which is a very reasonable thing. Like, in any other scenario, you're like, this sounds super reasonable for you to hold that opinion, religious or not, right? But then in Bachelor World, it's like, and they presented it like, and I was sucked into it. It's like, this is crazy. How could she ever... impose
yeah,
that
no.
restriction on him, right?
I mean, it did feel kind of crazy because we're used to Bachelor World, but I feel like this creeped in several times in the season where, like, I think we talked about this with Alex, Anthony, so you might be hearing this for the second time. You too, listeners, sorry. but, like, Me Too is kind of, like, not Me Too as a whole, but, like, just, you know, all of that means, right? Like, lean in, empowerment, all of that stuff, you know, is like kind of creeping into like historically like the one of the more misogynist corners of television, primetime yeah. television. And it's showing itself in weird ways. Like there was a time where all the girls were like mad at Peter. I think it was because he was like either talking to Hannah Brown or something, or he brought back that one girl that was awful earlier on.
Yes.
And he like talked to her again. And they were all like, this is bullshit. Like, we're not cool with this. We don't like you. Like you would if you were talking to your boyfriend and you're like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? Like, this is not okay. Like, I won't be treated this way, right? And like, that's not really common on The Bachelor. Like, it's always like whatever he says goes, or whatever she, you know, if she's the bachelorette, says goes. And like, we're not gonna rock the boat, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they're always right. Unless it's someone being like, oh, so-and-so, like, totally isn't here for the right reasons. Like, throwing someone under the bus. But it's never like, I'm mad at you. Like, it's almost never like, oh, I'm mad at you because you're behaving in a way that
right.
I don't like. Bachelor, yeah. lead actor, right?
Despite the fact that in any other scenario, that would be a logical response. But,
of
like,
course,
yeah, they never actually
not.
Do it in the confines of the show, because it's kind of like, listen, we all agreed to this strange contract, so now we have to pretend that these are the rules of civilization, right? And I mean, the rules of civilization are very mutable, as we've discovered. So, like, I get it that it's a social contract, but it was, this season, I think more than ever, it did, you're right, show its, like, weird seams, right? Because there was those that you mentioned, all those examples. Then there was the one who was a lawyer, I think. And she was just kind of like, oh, yeah, like, this is a fun trip that I got. And I'm just enjoying the trip because it's so fun. And it was like, oh, how come this person is so normal? and his whole problem with her was that she was not, like, showing enough commitment or dedication or, like, seriousness about the whole
with
situation.
Madison?
No, she left earlier. She made it pretty far because she got to keep going on.
Kelly, the like older one.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was too much. My mom always says she's too much woman for him anyway. She is. She's like, she knows what's up. She knows what she wants. Like, she she does not give a shit. She's fine with him or without him. Like, yeah. I loved Kelly. She was great.
Oh, she was fantastic. And yeah, like in all the like confessionals or whatever, like the one-on-one interviews, it was clear that she was just like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm here. It's cool if we work out. It's also cool if we don't. It's just like,
yeah.
Yeah.
She was, and at one point she was like, I can't wait to go to the beach. Like, she was like, I really hope we get to like pet the stingrays or something like that.
Yeah. She was like, just basically talking about the fun activities they get to do and nothing about like Bachelor. The other ones are all like, I can't wait until I see.
I haven't stopped thinking about Peter since our last date. I just miss him so much, but I am worried about his relationships with the other women, you know? And then Kelly's like, do you think we'll get to see a sea turtle?
Yeah. This one had more like genuine, I guess, fourth wall breaking or something. Like, just like, there was a lot of like, either people just didn't give a shit about the format anymore, or people were just like, I don't know, I'm like kind of mad about this, and I feel like I should be able to say I'm mad about this. And it was very different, I think, than other
I liked it seasons. Though I think
it was good.
I wish that they would let stuff like that happen, because it's gonna happen on its own, right? Like, I compare Bachelor and Survivor a lot, which really isn't fair to Survivor because Bachelor is trash, but like, it's a social experiment in a lot of ways, right? You're like putting people in these really weird confines and seeing how they'll behave. And we now have like 20 years of data on how people will behave on The Bachelor. And it has evolved naturally over time, and that has kept it interesting in many ways. Of course, I'm not like discounting what the producers do, because they obviously add in flares and twists and edits that make it more interesting to watch or funny to watch or whatever. But they got their hands too deep in it this time, I feel like with all of the surprises with Victoria F's ex-boyfriend and like, I don't know.
Yeah, that was weird and like obviously heavily engineered, right? Like, what are there's no coincidental chance that your ex-boyfriend, the country music star, shows up at the friggin' Bachelor date or whatever, right? So
it felt like there were several of those things, like repeatedly, where it was just like, can you guys actually let us watch? Like, we haven't even, like, we didn't really watch The Bachelor. It was like, the women are mad at Peter because of Hannah Brown. Women are mad at Peter because of this other bitch girl that they gave too much airtime to. I shouldn't have called her a bitch, but she was kind of bitchy. My bad. And then, you know, they do the whole like Madison thing and the mom crying on TV. Like, what about that mom, Daryl? Like,
oh yeah, the mom was intense, but also fantastic in the finale.
You bring her home.
They did an inset picture-in-picture thing that I don't know that they've done much previously, at least not to this extent, of just like her reaction to everything going on with like Peter and Hannah Ann. And it was just her constantly rolling her eyes like as hard as she possibly could. And it was just like, or not her and Hannah Ann, sorry, her and Madison, because she hates Madison. And it was wonderful. It was like, it made that far, far, far more entertaining than that usually is, that end show.
Yeah, and the end show had opportunity to be interesting, but it looked like Peter and Madison were like sweating. They just couldn't do anything in that final half hour.
Yeah.
And so the mom came in and was like, how about this? I hate you, Madison. Madison was like, I'm not going to say anything bad about anyone ever. And the mom was like, you're never going to be right for him. This is never going to work out. And Peter was like, Mom, like, be cool. And she was like, I hate you too, Peter. Like, it was like really good television. I mean, that wasn't word for word, but it might as well have been.
Yeah. That made good TV. And they also, like, it's weird though, because the outcome, I guess it doesn't matter, spoilers on this show. I think the crossover of people who watch The Bachelor and people who actually listen to the show is probably very small. Although, hopefully they appreciate our recaps.
Right. Well, in the notes, it will both include a spoiler warning and also a timestamp to skip this discussion.
Right. Yeah. But like the ending was maybe one of the stupidest and like most non like satisfying endings, including like the post show and everything of all Bachelor, like in terms of the ostensible goal of the show, which is to like have the person find their person. Because basically he like proposes to Hannah Ann. She gets really mad about that because he breaks up with her like 2 months later after they just like don't talk for a while or talk on the phone.
They didn't even talk at all. And like, imagine also her watching the show. So she's seeing all this happen as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And his proposal was maybe the worst I've ever seen. Cause he was like, so the other girl's home, she actually left 2 days ago, but I couldn't, there's no one I'd rather have here. And it's like, wait, what? Why did you just slide that in? to this proposal, because it yeah. really sounds like a qualification. And you could see her just like emotionally like, how do I deal with that information packaged with this other information, which I like. And then yeah, it just ended up being like nothing, because then he just waffled like two months later, and then she was furious at him for, what did she say? How did she put it? Like, essentially taking away this moment, like her engagement, her one engagement, her first engagement, right? And then he like, there's this thing where like Chris Harrison goes to Madison and is like, what do you think? Can you make it happen? And then they have a half-hearted attempt at like renewing that relationship, and then all news reports are like, oh, by the way, like they broke up 2 days after that. And it really didn't even seem like they were that into it during the show. So that was not at all a surprise to me that those two were going to break up as well. So ending of this Bachelor is like nothing, nada, nothing came out of it. Nobody even got to be like a cool revenging bachelorette, because they gave it to Claire. I don't know what her name is. Claire, yes.
But I don't think that's the worst thing. Do you like Claire? I don't know how I feel about Claire yet. I'm like, meh. I think it's better than Hannah Brown, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, for sure better than that. But I have no information about Claire that I can recall, so I don't know how I feel about that. I don't think I watched Juan Pablo's season, and
Juan Pablo's season was terrible. I didn't watch it either. I saw like a little bit of it and was like, ugh. Yeah. Juan Pablo is like, I think, voted like one of the worst bachelors ever.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, he sounds like
Peter's going to give him a run for his money.
I know. Given the general quality of them, like that's a real bad accolade. Yeah.
Colton's out here. We got Peter Weber's out here. We got Nick Vialli's out here. we got some bad bachelors to work with. Anyway, well, another terrible season is behind us. Who knows what they'll do if, I mean, they were looking for their next bachelors and bachelorettes. I wonder.
Wasn't there a rumor that they were looking for like
senior? Reality TV.
Oh, yeah, I know. That's right. Shit, I forgot what's going on because we got so into this.
Yeah, sorry. Real World, I am curious about it, but we don't have to talk about it. But it's something that I wonder about.
Well, like, maybe they'll make it more like Love is Blind. But they'll just like not have them leave the pods. It'll be a Love is Blind with no pod leaving.
Well, I mean, if everyone's safe and they go like for something like Survivor, right? Or if they did the whole thing in the mansion.
Oh, yeah, they could contain them as if they screen them and test them and then, like, keep them all.
But then it's just, like, the crew, right? Like, can
first
you do
you
it
need
with,
a
like,
working
a skeleton
test,
crew?
That's, like, that you could actually use on people.
Yeah, that's true. You need a test that totally. You can trust and that you can actually process the results in a timely manner, and yes.
One day. Okay.
Although I do like the idea that, like, our reality show contestants will be the last people to survive.
I mean, yeah. Think about something like Survivor. You go put them, you know, on an island in Fiji, and the crew
the
and the cast
Survivor.
Are all safe. It's like, well,
is that the premise for something yet? It should be.
Like the last people left
reality
are
show?
The yeah.
Yeah, like we'll at least we'll put together a treatment. Well,
or yeah, no, more like a not even a reality show, but like a scripted drama where, you know, instead of like something terrible, like he was in an accident and he woke up and the zombie apocalypse happened, they were all in a reality show together. And then when they left,
this is
the
great.
World was in flames.
You guys, it kind of builds into my existing idea of a rom-com. I told you about this, Daryl, where the two best friends decide to go on The Bachelor so that they can get the ring and get married, because you can keep it if you're married for like 2 years, I think.
Oh, and that's so how long it takes to get the Neil Lane ring?
Yeah, to keep it. If you get divorced within 2 years, you have to get married and stay together, I think, for 2 years to keep the ring. Otherwise, you give it back. But, like, I wanted to do a rom-com where these two friends who don't really, like, are not sexually attracted whatsoever fall in love on The Bachelor trying to do this ring heist. But we could also make it coronavirus as well.
Just fold that in there.
Just fold it in. Just weave it in.
Wow.
It's so, an idea.
Speaking
of
the best ring.
Concepts are always, you know, like, different concepts linked together.
So yeah, yeah. Just pile them on top of each other. That way it has layers.
Yeah. Yeah, we want layers. And also, we just put it all out on the internet. If you guys are working on these projects...
Well, I was going to propose that we just have this be a teledrama that we continue to create over time.
We could,
on the podcast. Yeah,
totally.
It'll be an addendum to the podcast.
There are really good podcasts like that that are just continuing making up stories.
Oh, yeah. Like, I listen
hundreds
to...
hundreds and hundreds of episodes.
I really like...
are we pivoting?
Hello
live?
From the Magic Tavern. That's a good one. If anybody's
yeah, that's Maria's
for a
favorite. That's Maria's favorite podcast.
Love it.
You guys are friends.
Wait, Daryl, so you also saw Love is Blind, right?
Yes.
Yeah, let's stay on track.
Yeah, I did see it. Oh, I wanted to just say that the Neil Lennon ring from The Bachelor this time around was the ugliest thing I've ever seen in my life.
So ugly. I don't know what to
call it. He should be ashamed of himself for picking it.
Pear-shaped?
That. It was a pear-shaped one. Just
like,
festooned with diamonds. Festooned.
How about this, guys? Unless she asks for a pear-shaped diamond specifically, she probably doesn't want one.
That's right.
I'm just gonna
That's good advice.
Go out on a limb with that one.
This
I'm probably
is now
wrong. I'm
an
like
engagement
the worst
advice
girl ever.
Podcast.
I'm probably wrong too. I'm like the worst girl ever. Like, I don't fucking know. Anyway, Love is Blind. You missed our whole talk on it, and
I'm so sad about that because I was enamored by that show
too.
Oh man, it's great.
Well, so one of the things we did was we talked about our most interesting and least interesting couples. I mean, we actually had like a whole ranking, but do you have any thoughts on that? Who was your favorite couple?
Oh, my favorite couple had to be Jessica and Mark, because they were just like a mess, like a total mess. Is that what you mean, or do you mean that they were the most entertaining couple? Is that what you mean by favorite?
That's basically what we meant. Yeah.
Okay.
I think that was our. Did we? No, I think we said Jessica and Mark.
Jessica and Mark were like, I think, the most entertaining couple, but then the like second most entertaining, and like what I actually think out of several terrible relationships was one of the best relationships was Barnett and Amber, even though they're like just a trash fire, both separately and together. They were better together than they were apart.
That's true. I think that like, I don't think that was a nice way of saying it. I was going to say the less nice way of saying it. Is that they deserved each other?
They deserved each other. But I also think they like.
Nice?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm being a little mean today.
No. I think you're spot on. I think they are both horrible people, and individually and also together.
Are you changed, Daryl? Like, are you changed now? Are you not as harsh? Am I the meanest person on the podcast now? Because I'm not cool with that. I'm gonna have to adjust.
I'm still cruel.
Okay, let me know if I need to recalibrate, because I can't be the woman and the meanest one. That's just not how we operate.
No, I found them both awful. I thought that she annoyed me to no end. Like, every time she opened her mouth, I was like, oh God, what's happening? And then, but I did, there was something sweet about the way that she was like, the one part where she admitted she was a total, I thought he was a scumbag because of the way that he treated everybody
Barnett.
At the start.
Oh
yeah.
Yeah,
Barnett. But like,
I mean, the way he treated everyone.
Yes, the way he treated everyone, literally all the time. But there was like the moment where she was they like were exposing their like kind of home lives to each other and their like past, and she was like, oh yeah, like I lived in a car and like I have carry all this debt and I don't really have a job. And he was like, okay, well, we can work through it. And I was like, oh man, this, you really redeemed yourself.
Yeah.
I thought
you,
that
like,
was
actually love her. And at one point he was like, I don't know what she's doing all day, really. Like, I've been at work all day and I don't know what she does really.
Yeah.
But he like loves her, and he like punked her at their wedding. Like, I just, they do seem to like kind of belong together in a way. Like, I don't want to be friends with either of them, but I'm glad they found each other, kind of thing.
Yeah. And I also want to know, like the other the, you brought up like he punked her or whatever, and, but it was it ended up being sweet, right? But like that that episode when they did the I don't know how they contractually require them to do that stuff, but it was so upsetting. So
it was
upsetting.
So bad. Like the fact that they made them go all the way through it, no matter yeah. what, and that they did that binding. Like, do you ever notice that the priest or whatever, or the whatever pastor, officiant, whatever you call it, was like, do you commit your life in holy matrimony to this other person in front of friends, family, and the world, or will you walk away from them forever?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And it was like, why?
It was
is
such
it
a binary,
so binary.
It was like, wait,
yeah,
is that?
Like...
And then it turned out not to be the case, right? Because Giannina and Damien are still, as of this recording, together. Even
I do
though,
not like them.
Well, I think they're fine, but I do think I think they're a funny couple, like in terms of their relative or respective personalities. But like, I can't believe that they're still together after that, because that one
me
was
neither.
For
this
me
is also
the harshest.
2 years ago, or like a year and a half ago, she was vicious with him, and him with her too. But her being like, "Our sex is bad." Like,
yeah.
What the fuck?
Well, that was all leading up, but then him at the altar was like, was devastating to her. The way that he did it, it was just like, like his face all broke up, and you knew it was coming, and she had to sit there and just be like, oh, and her whole family came. Like, that was what the saving grace was for some of the other ones, was that they clearly knew what was going on, so they didn't bother getting their family there or whatever. And
yeah,
you
poor
get the sense
Mark,
they're telegraphed
like,
in some way. Oh, poor Mark, yeah.
Super
but,
poor Mark, but I'm actually
I don't feel
happy
that bad
for him.
For Mark,
he dodged a bullet.
Oh yeah, yeah, exactly. He did, and also I think he's kind of boring. So I kind of am like, I'm not really.
Oh, I don't.
I don't know that he deserves happiness.
I mean, he's just.
See,
young.
I'm still
he's
a cruel
boring.
One.
he's just young. He's not boring. He just doesn't know anything yet, but he'll yeah, learn. Yeah. I'm happy true. That he didn't get hit by the bullet.
Did you guys talk about the tech tie-in when you did the recap?
Wait, I have
no what's
idea
the
what you're
tech
about.
Tie-in? I don't know.
Oh, just that Jessica is a like an executive at Box. I think she's a sales executive, but she's an executive.
Oh yeah, she was like, I'm a tech expert.
Yeah,
I feel like half the people on that show have very, you know, 2018 type jobs. I may have mentioned this before, but like, yeah, there's a social media editor. There's somebody whose title is just content creator, I think. It's
yes, yeah. Yeah, that's Lauren. She's a content creator, and she had a studio. Remember in her place?
She yeah,
like,
she did. She
studio.
Had a little studio.
Yeah, and it looked
like
a, like
a YouTuber or
YouTuber
something.
YouTuber studio, know. Yeah. There was also Cameron was a data scientist, and I think maybe also described as a programmer at some point during the show. I don't know where or what he does.
We talked a little bit, Daryl, about how we felt about Nick and Vanessa Lachey.
Yeah, well, obviously I'm Nick Lachey, so there is that.
Obviously, I'm Nick Lachey. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Can you imagine, really?
I mean, he didn't really do anything. He just sat there like kind of a lump, and Vanessa did all the heavy lifting, I feel like.
But even
I don't know
heavy
if either of them did a lot of heavy
bad.
Lifting.
Yeah, I mean, like, we're sitting at the reunion with, like, these people that we have so many questions for, and Vanessa's just like, y'all, it must have been tough, like, you know, yeah. Like, just can we get to the juice here? Like, why am I watching this? I don't
She's
know.
She's definitely not as good as, oh, who is the woman who hosts the After the 90
Honestly,
Days
Andy
special?
Cohen is the is
right.
the is the gold standard in this. And
well, she's a Andy Cohen equivalent, and she's very good too. So it's not fair to. I'll try to find out.
Oh, I'm not trying to diminish whoever it is that you can't remember the name of. I'm just I'm just saying Andy Cohen's great. And if we could have even a bit of that. I mean, the main thing is that, like, we are kind of repeating our last podcast, but they don't.
This is a bonus episode anyway.
They were on the camera for like 2% of that entire show, and it was too much. It was way too much. Like, we didn't need them. I didn't want them. I don't want to see them. I don't like them.
Yeah, that's fair. I get that. I don't think they did a great job. I don't think they were like, it was like they were the glue that held the thing together. That's definitely not true. So, But, you know, without actually, they could have not been there at all. And they probably should do that next time around. Like, just eliminate them and then just have it entirely be, like, whatever, over-the-shoulder documentary footage of the couples involved. You don't need the host. The host did nothing. You're right.
Well, and even, like, when the participants, I guess contestants, you know, a lot of times they would be interviewing each other. Like, there'd be these guys who you'd be like, where did this guy come from? And he would just be, like, asking questions. And so, yeah, I don't think you need the hosts at all.
Yeah, they should do the Where Are They Now for those people. Like, the people that appeared in one episode just to elicit some information from one of the other
This
people.
Person has never had sex again.
And we before we move on entirely, I don't know if we are, but my favorite like little Chiron or lower thirds job description was Amber's, because it was ex-tank mechanic. That was all they ever listed her as. It was, oh boy.
I liked that though.
That's good. Wow. It's good.
Like, and then she was also like super aggressive, and she was like, I'll just beat their ass. And you were like, I believe you. Like, I believe you.
Yeah, she was threatening to beat up Jessica, like, constantly.
Oh, my God. And Jessica and Amber drunk on the Bachelorette Party episode was some of the funniest shit I've ever seen. Amber was, like, crying. I just can't believe I met the man, my best friend. And then she was like, and I'm really drunk. Yeah, we know.
Yeah, this was a funny one, like, by all general reality standards in a lot of ways. Like, it seemed like they got genuinely non-theatrically drunk. Like, they were like drunk in the way that people who are actually just partying get drunk. And then the other thing about it that I liked was they didn't really make any attempt to sanitize that interaction between the couple that broke up early, Diamond and Carlton. Like, that was messy as hell and raised a lot of issues, and I think it just kind of was presented as it was. And I don't think, like, in the post show, they seem to have made some progress and, like, did some growing across both individuals, but, like, in the actual episode where that went down, it was just raw and ugly, and there was no kind of, like, attempt to save it or clean it up. You know, it was good. It was not something I think you'd see on The Bachelor, for instance.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys went into detail about that particular.
Yeah, we did. Right. I mean, it was I agree that, like, it was hard to watch and
oh yeah,
you know,
it's really hard to watch.
It's still, I mean, a lot of that stuff, it's still edited in this sort of reality show way where there are sort of these, like, pregnant silences with music playing over them that feels a little bit on the nose, but I agree that it, you know, the fact, I mean, it was still, I mean, it made for amazing and hard to watch television.
Yeah. All right. But yeah, they're going to do more, I'm sure. So I look forward to that happening. I mean, if and when stuff, I mean, not if, when stuff can resume. Jesus.
We're not there yet, buddy.
Yeah. Well, okay, I mean, I think that's actually a relatively good lead into one of the pieces of news that I wanted to discuss before we got into our next review, which was, and partly I wanted to mention this just because I know we kind of had this, with our last episode, it was kind of like, yes, we're hunkering down, we're going to watch some streaming, and that is all true. Just one thing to keep in mind in the long term is that pretty much television and film production has halted in the United States, and so every Netflix show that was being shot in the United States is not filming right now. Every, you know, Disney Plus, Apple TV Plus show that was shooting in the United States has paused production. And I think in the case of, it's starting to affect other productions as well. I think in the UK, they were shooting The Witcher. That's been put on pause. And so, you know, I think at some point we're going to see, I mean, with Netflix, it's kind of hard to tell because they just make so much stuff. So they could slow down by 50%. And I don't know if anyone would notice. But, I, you know, I think there is also going to be a sort of slowdown in what we actually see in streaming at some point. I don't know, you know, 9 to 12 months from now.
Yeah, there'll have to be a lull because, like, they've ramped really aggressively over the past few years, right? So it might not be all that noticeable depending on how long those kind of pauses last. But But on the other hand, people have gotten used to that kind of pace increase, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's amazing even now how often I find myself going to Netflix and saying like, oh, there's nothing new. And it's like, no, there is. There's tons of new stuff. You've just changed your balance or your sensitivity for like how often new stuff comes along and how much of it you have to kind of compromise your tastes in order to enjoy. Like, that's the other thing. Like, you before you would say like, oh, I'll watch this because it seems interesting and because maybe other people like it, and now there's so much content that you can kind of be hyper specific about, like,
selective. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel myself going in that way too. I'm like, nope, and it's like, really, like, The Witcher was in my nopes. I haven't seen it yet. Like,
oh yeah, yeah.
But you know, like, what I mean?
So I feel like that could be a good outcome, or an interesting outcome at least, in that, like, as there are fewer and fewer things that are like completed production coming out, like, people will kind of like gravitate towards those, and maybe you'll have more social event watching content, which, like, in general, there's a lot more, like, I don't know, shared commiseration or just like shared discussion of things because of the way that people are isolated in other ways, like in person social groups and things like that. And I think that a lot of that has actually resulted in, at least for me, like, better discourse or more quality discourse than some of the stuff that was happening before, when people maybe didn't have as dire distractions to stay away from. But I don't know, that may just be anecdotally, but also maybe that's why I'm feeling less cruel, Jordan, or exhibiting less cruelty.
Yeah, I'm noticing that.
Well, we'll find something for you to be angry about at some point soon.
It's only a matter of time. Yeah.
The other piece of news that I wanted to mention, there's sort of these linked pieces of news, which is just that, I mean, in some ways, I think this will just sort of be obvious to anyone who is, you know, alive and watching the news or considering going to a movie, which would be kind of strange right now. Is that, you know, movie theaters across the country, the country being the United States, are closing. I think, you know, a lot of international theaters have been affected as well. Some of the big chains, Regal, AMC, they're just shutting down indefinitely. Before, they were going into this kind of distancing mode where they, you know, limited capacity to 50%. Everyone was supposed to like sit in every other seat, but now they're closing entirely. And so one of the things that means is that movies that were coming out in, they were supposed to come out in theaters, they suddenly have no theaters to come out in. And the way some studios have responded is by just pushing release dates back. I mean, especially the really big blockbusters like No Time to Die, Mulan, Fast Black Widow, 9, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Is all going to come out way late. Is just basically going to come out end of this year, early next year. You know, knock on wood, theaters will be open then. But the way that Universal decided to approach this with both the movies they have in theaters and then some of the movies that are coming out is that instead they're just going to release the film in whichever theaters are open, and then they're going to release them, you know, on iTunes, Amazon, wherever you can rent movies online. And it'll be for a higher price than for a normal movie. So it'll be $19.99 for a 48-hour rental. But that's essentially what they're doing. And in some ways it seems like, well, of course that's what you would do. That seems like a smart approach. But it's also kind of a huge deal in the sense that for the longest time in Hollywood, all the theaters chains basically really refused to countenance the idea that there could be any sort of shrinking of the theatrical window, and that, you know, there had to be a period of time where movies were only in theaters. And if you broke with that the way Netflix did, then the big theater companies would not play your movies. And I think this has been the thing that has kind of broken that. And it kind of remains to be seen whether, when this is over and the theaters are open again, everything goes back to the way it was before, or suddenly it's much more of a free-for-all in terms of how movies get released, which is, I mean, already happening, but it feels like this has really accelerated it even more.
Yeah, I think that, like, a lot will depend on how what signals they see, right, as a result of this. But, like, and a lot of them, like, Disney's projecting massive losses already, but that I think that's a complex picture of their parks and everything else too, right? So that I don't think that is specifically around film releases, but if and depending on how long this extends, I think some of those blockbusters will start, maybe at least some of the ones that where there are more questions about how they would perform in theater will become kind of direct releases as well. And that should provide more interesting information to these studios about the usefulness of that release process in like now modern times. So I think it'll be a really interesting experiment, like unfortunate circumstances, but definitely an interesting thing to watch in terms of how the studios change their practice around this. And it's one of those things where like so many other things that are going on right now, like there's no way, even universal basic income, for instance, right? Like there's no way you would see this happening under normal circumstances, even if a lot of people have been advocating it for a long time. But in this weird scenario, it's kind of almost forced to the fore and embraced by a lot more people who would not normally embrace it. So you get to see what the results would be, right? And you definitely have to qualify the results of all of this stuff with like, okay, these circumstances are highly unusual and unlikely to be repeated in exactly the same way in future, right? But at least for this one, I feel like the studios will get a pretty good sense of like, maybe it is time to retire that model, which would have a lot of negative effects. Like it would be a shame for everybody who is employed by movie theaters and who makes their living that way, right? But other models could arise to replace it, and other opportunities could arise to replace it as well, depending on how that works out.
Mm-hmm. I did actually want to mention one other thing, which is just that in the short term also there are, I mean, I think we're going to see, without getting too big picture, I mean, I think we're just going to see a lot of industries right now that are really going to be hurting, and a lot of hourly workers who suddenly aren't going to be making money. And so as part of the closure of the theaters is there's something called the Cinema Worker Solidarity Fund, which I will link to in the show notes. But that's if you're concerned about people who work in the movie theater industry, that's something you can donate to right now. And it looks like that money will go towards people who, you know, used to work in that industry who suddenly cannot work anymore.
Great. Yeah, that's good that they're doing something. I wasn't aware of that one in particular, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see a lot of this stuff starting to pop up, because I think, I mean, at least from a New York-centric view, where, you know, just so many things are shutting down right now, and I think so many people were, you know, in jobs where they can't, you know, suddenly their job is gone. I think that, yeah, there's just going to be a lot of GoFundMes, a lot of crowdfunding, and but, you know, this is one that seemed relevant to the topic at hand.
Yeah.
Well, should we talk a little bit about Hillary then?
I guess so.
Well, so Jordan, you were the first one to watch it. I mean, obviously, this is something that a lot of people have been talking about, but what interested you in the film?
I mean, Hillary Clinton probably was my main draw.
Fair enough.
I mean, I watched it a week ago. I feel like I actually wouldn't watch it today, to be honest, just because it deals with a time that is also painful. I mean, for me, I think the closest I have ever felt on like a national or global level, the most kind of like despair I've ever had was the 2016 election. And then now there's this, right? And it's like, oh, hold my beer. And it's kind of like a 1-2 punch as well, because, you know, depending on how you feel about Trump's reaction to all this, I feel like it was abhorrent and has been. Then the idea that Hillary could have been there right now, and like how I would feel. Sorry to bring that up. is just like particularly poignant. So with all that in mind, you know, remember I watched this like a week and a half ago, felt different at the time. But yeah, I mean, I do think that it's just generally an interesting documentary. There were a lot of things that like I think I knew somewhere in my head, but wasn't like never consciously kind of activated in any way, even in 2016, which is like just how much of a glass ceiling shatterer Hillary Clinton is, and how much of a first she was, like all the way back when she was in school trying to be a lawyer, you know, practicing law, being like, I think one of the first governor's wives to ever like keep her job and her name. Obviously she lost that battle, and just kind of like learning a little bit more about her shift from, like, she used to be like one of the like extremists, like she was like worse than Bernie kind of thing, like not that Bernie's bad, but like more progressive than Bernie for her time type situation, like, and how she essentially tempered that down her whole life for her husband's political career, you know, and their career together as a couple. I think, you know, they did most of what they did together. Credit to Bill Clinton for giving more kind of power to a first lady than has ever been had, and more responsibility. But yeah, I mean, it was just weird to see all that tempered down, and then for her to be called essentially not progressive enough running against Bernie is just a really interesting thing, you know, like that. I didn't really know, I think, as much as I feel like I learned a lot, you know, and it made her even more interesting to me, and even more kind of a hero figure to me, and just in terms of what she's been able to accomplish and what she's done for women and stuff like that. What did Daryl, you didn't watch it, but Anthony, what did you think?
Yeah, but let me ask a question about this.
Go on.
Uh-oh.
Is it a multi-part series?
It's four parts on Hulu, and each episode is a little bit over an hour.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right.
People who listen to the podcast know that I don't necessarily have as much patience for documentaries and multi-part documentaries as Jordan and probably a lot of other people do. But I thought in this case, like, it totally justified its length. And, you know, I think because a lot of times when you have a documentary about a person and trying to encompass their whole life, that it can be really hard to boil stuff down, and it can feel really simplified. And the fact that they had more than 4 hours to work with, I felt like, you know, that they could, you know, they still had to simplify things. There were still things that they mentioned and they kind of moved on. And I was like, wait, like, you know, let's talk about that some more. But overall, it felt like it had just much more nuance and depth than a standard movie documentary about Hillary Clinton would have had.
Yeah.
One other thing that I would say, I mean, in terms of just like my interest in it, was that I was somebody who certainly, you know, supported her in 2016, was, you know, absolutely devastated when she lost. But I think over the last few years, my impression of her has soured a little bit, in the sense of, I think, just, you know, I spend a lot of time following, you know, reading articles and tweets by people who are maybe, you know, further on the left than I am, who are very, very pro Bernie. And I mean, I think they have a lot of legitimate criticisms of her, and the documentary gets into a number of them.
But totally.
I think, you know, just because, you know, and partly because we're in this primary, you know, this Democratic primary now, where again, there feels like this battle between sort of the more left wing and more moderate branches of the Democratic Party. And so because of, you know, my sympathy is probably more on the left-wing side, I sort of associated Hillary with that and was kind of like, oh, she's just, you know, the establishment. And I think the documentary does a great job of both acknowledging the ways in which that's true, but also pointing to a history in which that's not true, which I think is actually true of, like, that's the case with a number of people we think of as Democratic establishment figures right now. It also just made me think of when I realized that, you know, John Kerry used to be this pretty intense anti-war activist, you know, because of his actual experiences in Vietnam. And I think part of that is because of who they become, that I think as these, you know, politicians who started out as activists are in Washington for a long time, I do think they become the establishment in some ways. And I think it's fair to criticize them, and for younger generations in particular to come in and say, listen, you know, thank you for your service, but like, we've got new ideas. And so I don't think that's bad. But I think it's worth remembering that, you know, the Hillary Clinton that we saw in 2016, again, who I don't think was a bad candidate or anything, but that's not who she was all of her life. That was who she was at that point in time. And then to your point about like how, like the challenge of watching it, I mean, I did not realize how much of this show would be about the 2016 election, because it's structured in this way where there are basically two strands. One is following the 2016 election through the primary and then the general election. And then that's weaved with a more sort of standard biography of her whole life and political career. And so you spend a lot of time reliving like just all the stuff that was really shitty about the 2016 election. Mm-hmm. And it can be hard to watch. I mean, I think it's really compelling at the same time. And I think that, I mean, it's really smartly structured and never boring, but you have to spend a lot of time like watching people say dumb shit about Hillary. You have to watch a lot of time seeing sound bites from Donald Trump, and you just feel this sense of dread building as the show goes on.
Yeah, it's really true. And it feels like an anchor on the whole thing, but still I couldn't help but feel like uplifted by it all, which I think is a feat in and of itself. Like, mm-hmm. I did feel at the end kind of sad, obviously, that Hillary isn't president, but just really uplifted by the whole story in general. And I will say, like, two of the things that I found most interesting. One was just her and Bill and like revisiting that a little bit. I feel like during the last election, like Bill wasn't as, I know he gave his speech at the convention and that was really nice. But other than that, I don't feel like their relationship was really ever front and center. I mean, nor should it be necessarily, right? I'm sure that that was the campaign's choice to kind of like leave him out of it. But it was nice to hear them talk about each other. And it just feels like they really do love each other. They're both very skilled politicians, so who knows how they really feel. But it just felt like a really great kind of progressive partnership, especially for its time on both sides. Obviously, Bill cheated on her, and that's terrible, and all of the things that we all already know. But despite all of that, I do think that there's something really beautiful about their relationship and partnership, which I liked watching. And then the other thing was just like something that I think people had trouble articulating all the time. They said unlikable. They said the establishment. They said a lot of different things. But the documentary really zoomed in on and showed crystal clear was that Hillary operates within the bounds of the policy and the way government is organized. Like, that's how she's known for getting things done within that, not around that or outside of that. And so when she's talking, you know, when she's campaigning against Bernie in the primary, and Bernie says free tuition at state schools, right? And the voters say, well, can you get us free tuition at state schools? You know, like, Bernie, can you promise that? And Hillary launches into her one of her like staffers, maybe the campaign manager or someone, was like, here's what happens when that question enters Hillary's mind, as she goes into the math of it all. And she's thinking of five precedent legal precedents and different policies and bipartisan support and support in the House and support in the Senate and all of these different pieces that work together. And she's trying to explain a very complicated thing in a simple way. And it just doesn't land. You know, she said, well, if we take 15% off of this and then we add 3% to the national this and then we do this, then you end up with more savings and it work, you know, and that just doesn't land with people. And she did this all the time. You know what I mean? Where she just went into the math of it and it was true and it was real and it held up. You know, I mean, we don't know for sure if it holds up in a actual system because we didn't get to do a bunch of it, but
And we didn't check the math.
Right. But like, that's her brand, right? Like, I have some trust in the fact that the math would have held up, right? Or that, you know, she at least had a clear plan. And I'm not saying Bernie didn't, but she really struggled to kind of, and she would say, I don't want to lie. you know, and people would say, you could just say it. Just say it, you will. Like, it's not going to happen for either of them anyway.
Right.
This is never going to happen. So just say what you're going to say. And she was like, I just couldn't do that. You know, she had to keep it to the letter. And you could see how problematic it was. You're literally watching people at rallies' faces be like, what? You know, like that meme of the woman with all the math on the board. Like, when she was talking, and you're like, oh, no wonder she didn't, you know, no wonder she couldn't pull it off. Like, there are a bunch of factors in that, obviously, but
yeah. I mean, one of the other things that ties into as well is I think it's worth acknowledging that the film, for the most part, the people that it interviews are people who are, you know, I mean, probably the most compelling stuff are the interviews with Hillary and with Bill, but the other people who are on camera are either journalists who, on the whole, seem relatively sympathetic. They're not fans, but they're not like, you know, just like, she's amazing, I love her. But, you know, they seem, you know, sympathetic to her point of view and her experience. And there are people who have worked with her and are friends with her. So you don't get, like Bernie Sanders is not on camera. I mean, I have no idea if they asked and he didn't agree. Trump is not on camera. I'm glad we get plenty of him through footage, but he's not interviewed. I'm glad he's not interviewed. But it is a narrative that is designed in a lot of ways to be sympathetic to her, not yes, without acknowledging the flaws, but there's sort of a structure where usually it'll sort of bring up a criticism that, you know, was leveled against her, and then it'll explain why that criticism was dumb and usually sexist, and usually right. It makes a very, very convincing case. But that is, you know, how it works, is that it's not trying to be, you know, a completely balanced, you know, here's the pro, here's the con. It's you know, here's a full picture from a mostly sympathetic filmmaker, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. For our listeners out there, I mean, like I said earlier, it may not be the thing for right now, but it's one to maybe add to my list and come back to when you're craving it, because it was well done, I think. It was really well done. And even if, I mean, maybe our Hillary experts out there who, you know, canvassed for her and were part of the organization and followed her for 40 years, maybe you don't have a lot to learn from this. But I think I thought I kind of had a clear, full picture of Hillary, and I learned a lot. So there's lots of interesting, fun, you know, unique tidbits in there that I just didn't really have a full grasp on. And it's great to see those old pictures. Young Hillary, young Bill. I mean, some of those things are just nostalgic in this weird way. So I recommend watching at some point, but maybe not, you know, the first thing. Maybe Frozen 2 first. That's a nice good.
And I planned on watching Hillary. I just didn't because of time constraints. But now I don't think I will, because I don't think I have the stamina to endure.
I just told you a bunch of it too.
Yeah, I mean, I will say that, I mean, it is stressful, but it is also hopeful. And I really, because I definitely thought, because it ends with the 2016 election, I thought that was just, I was going to end on such a down note, but I think they do a good job of acknowledging everything that was really bleak about that moment, but not letting it just be the most depressing thing you've ever heard or seen.
Yeah, like I said, I was uplifted. That was a week ago. Like, I don't know if I'd still be uplifted, but I'm pretty sure I would. Like, it isn't like down in the dumps. It's just not for like, you shouldn't be willy-nilly about it. You should be like in the mood for something like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I would add that I think it's probably for people who genuinely like Hillary or are ambivalent but open-minded about her. I think that particularly, and again, I think they sort of loom larger in my mind because it's just a lot of people I follow on Twitter. But if you're hardcore Sanders, you know, left-wing and don't like her, I don't think this film is going to change your mind. And obviously she said, there's the kind of quote that got circulated a lot from this movie where she said about Bernie, nobody likes him. And, you know, I think that the film is not, you do see like a little bit of like the Sanders supporters, and they don't come off very well, which I think is totally fair. I think a lot of Sanders supporters are dicks and
who's the meanest?
No, I mean, I think a lot of, you know, supporters of other candidates are too, but there's a specific kind of Sanders.
Remember, Anthony is a one, maybe, so don't attack him.
At Anthony Ha on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, if he's still on the ballot in New York and we have a New York primary, I will vote for him. Yeah, I mean, there's a certain kind of aggression that comes across in the film that's not great. But I think also the film is not, what I was trying to say is that I think the film isn't really interested in him. It's interested in Hillary, and it's only interested in him in as much as he sort of confounds her campaign. So if you're there trying to get a fair treatment of Bernie and of his ideas, that's not what you're going to get, and that'll probably be disappointing to you if that's what you're hoping for.
Absolutely.
All right, well, should we wrap things up then?
I think so. This was not the quick 45-minute podcast we intended it to be.
We packed a lot in there. I think hopefully Friday will be a little shorter unless we all just need to talk a lot again, which often
maybe
happens.
We will. Maybe we won't. Who cares? Mm-hmm.
What are we watching for Friday?
Amazing Stories. We're going to watch Amazing Stories on Apple TV+. We'll just watch the first few episodes that are out now. In the meantime, you can always email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. If you like the fact that we're going to be doing two episodes a week for the next few weeks, let us know. If you don't like it, let us know. If you tell us how you feel about Hillary or anything else, and if you have something substantive to say, we'll read it on the show. And of course, we always appreciate it if you subscribe and leave us positive reviews in Apple Podcasts and every other podcast app. Thank you for listening. Daryl and Jordan, be safe.
You too.
Yeah.